Do you want to talk about what you've been up to, Marco?
Yes, I would love to. Let's just say that we're entering into this conversation after not quite finishing the conversation that we were just having before we went live, where we were talking more about things like project management mm-hmm. and time, and exactly what you bring up, which is that at this stage, this is very much a volunteer organization, and we don't have much money. We have a few $100s in the bank at this time. Some of that's left over from last year, and some of it is money that is beginning to trickle in from the members that we've started to sign up at cosmos.coop. And so it's a kind of fledgling moment. Like we're just cracking out of the shell, and we don't yet fully have our wings, so we can't yet fly, but I think we're alive, and we're kind of chirping and asking for food, and you know, we're hungry for life. So what's really been going on, where I have had all my attention, most of my attention, has been on opening up and rolling out membership in the co-op membership, which at this stage is a beta membership. It's like we're not yet soaring in the sky. We're not yet 1.0 material, but we are doing things, and there is a community that's forming around the co-op and our journal and the book groups that we're going to talk about, and the podcasts and the whole platform, which you know, we've been working on for quite some time, and we've now come to this moment where we're ready to open the doors, tentatively at least, to our first members or our first beta members. And then as that, you know, unfolds, and as we get our legs, then we'll be able to open the doors a little bit wider. And I think we'll be able to do more, and more will be happening, because it won't just be me and you, but it'll be a whole community of people who are doing cool things. So that's kind of the moment that we're at, and I'm waking up every day and doing, you know, my esoteric rituals, and then getting to, you know, then taking care of other business. I still have to make some money, and I'm not paying myself at this stage. Like, we have other expenses to take care of before we can start paying ourselves, and you know, really creating an economy, not just for ourselves, but for all of our members as well. And we'll talk a bit about that as well later in the call. But when I turn my attention to Cosmos, I'm trying to figure out how can we, you know, get things as ready as possible? How can we make things as welcoming as possible? And how can we really just give this life? Because that's what I most desire for it. And that's what I think is most needed of it. And there's some good news on that. Like, you know, like we've gotten started, and we have cracked the shell, and we are at least sticking our beaks out. And so we can talk about the specifics of that, but I don't want to ramble for too long before. What would you like?
Too long with your metaphors.
Yeah.
We can go off the rails with some metaphors.
I know.
My favorite is still the amusement park for framing what Cosmos is or will be one day. Anyway. Back on.
Yeah, so what should we talk about?
The question is, do we want to talk about the invisible back end stuff that a lot of people aren't, like, don't see the fruits of necessarily, or at least directly? Or do we want to talk about what we've done to create more opportunities for our members directly? So, like, on that front, the Readers Underground book clubs is exciting. I kind of want to start there, and then we can talk about the back end stuff.
Okay, let's do that. That's great, because that's something that's live and happening, and where I think we've got a pretty good setup. You know, we're basically ready to go with that. And so Readers Underground is the transmutation of what was previously called Lit Geeks, the Lit Geeks Book Club, that was sort of our umbrella for reading The Ever-Present Origin last year, as well as a few other books, including The Dispossessed by Ursula Le Guin and The Saddlebag and Geek Love. And the idea, and actually it goes way back to the very origins of this project, because for me, I started doing this whole thing with a book group that I organized in the summer of 2013 to read the novel by David Foster Wallace, Infinite Jest. And that was called Summer of Jest. I just called it Summer of Jest, and I put up a web page and I opened it up and invited people to start to read it with me. And we did that all summer and had a lot of fun, I think. And that's what kind of got me thinking that this was something that people like, that there was something that book clubs could do, that because you have a book at the center of it, it kind of gives you an opportunity to go deep into subjects that you wouldn't otherwise in the course of your everyday life. And how powerful that can be when you can have conversations like that with people. I can go into a whole spiel on book clubs because I've been in a few. I'm not like totally a veteran, but I've done a few different book clubs with different formats, and we've done a few online as well. And there's some differences between those.
Why don't you talk about your vision for these two book clubs?
Okay, that's great. Yeah. So the vision has basically evolved since that time, since the first online book club I did, Summer of Jest, and it turned into Lit Geeks. And those were all sort of centrally managed book clubs where like myself and one or two others organized it and determined what the books would be and put it out there and promoted it and got people to sign up and so forth. And the way that, and I realized that after a few of those last year, that one, that's a ton of work, but two, it's also really limiting because my tastes in books are going to just reflect myself. And there are a lot, you know, everybody comes with books that they're already reading, that they want to read. So why not create a space where people can bring their own books to the table and find others to read with them? In other words, a more decentralized kind of book club, but still like coherent in some way, like still having certain parameters or a certain like purpose to it. Because what would be great, I thought, is if you had people really going deep into many different books and then cross-pollinating with each other. So you could just dip into one group or into another. And based on what you're interested in, and then if we have enough people involved and there's enough of a network effect, you'll always be able to find somebody to read the book that you want to read, but you'll also always be able to discover something that you would have never read before, or maybe never even heard of before. And so that's the idea of Readers Underground. And to kind of simplify the management of it, we moved it from its own website to a section on metapsychosis.com. Which also, I think, adds to metapsychosis because it gives it more of a grounding in a more literary and a more conversational culture, which, you know, has always been what I have wanted for it. And so we are starting with two more like centrally sort of broadcast book clubs because we need to get it started, and that's what I've been really focused on and what I'm what's really happening. Like that's something that people can sign up for right now. So the two books. I'll say the first one because you can sign up for it right now. The page is up. That's it's actually a series of books. It's a trilogy by the German philosopher Peter Sloterdijk called Spheres. And each book in the trilogy looks at a different sort of scale or dimensionality of this the way in which we are always in some kind of a container from the time we're in the womb to to this global world where there are many different kinds of containers or spheres that we find ourselves in, our apartment, our neighborhood, our social network, the kind of satellite, the kind of global planetary sphere, which is we're surrounded by satellites and communication technology, surveillance spheres. So the trilogy, the first one's called Bubbles. The second one is called Globes, and the third one's called Foams. And we're going to start reading the book Bubbles beginning April 13th. And we have, we're working with a cultural scholar, John David Ebert, who has written a whole number of books and recorded YouTube videos, both on Peter Sloterdijk as well as other philosophers who are connected, Martin Heidegger, Jean Gebser, who we also, as I mentioned, read. And he's a great guy. I talked with him last week, and we recorded an introduction to the reading group, which was supposed to be like 5 minutes, and then it turned into 30 minutes because we just started philosophizing. And he's got an interesting style. If you ever see his YouTube videos, he sort of talks with his hands, and he's got this dark background, so it looks like he's coming out of the void. And when you talk to him in person, that's how he looks too. So part of the book group is we're going to do these live conversations, and we're going to do 9 of them, one for each section in the book. That's going to start the end of April, and it's going to go into August. And then we have the forum where we'll do asynchronous discussions. And we're going to work our way through the first book. And if that goes well, we'll work our way through the second and the third. And, you know, we'll schedule those later. So that's exciting because I've had this book on my radar for quite a while. And I think that it's an interesting way to think about like how we're situated in the world and how we kind of exist in these multiple contexts and how those contexts or structures are structured to contain us and in many cases to protect us. And what happens when those structures are ruptured and when they change violently, as you know, has happened through history and as is happening right now.
Hmm.
So it should be a really interesting conversation. And people can sign up at metapsychosis.com and then go to the reading groups tab and you can learn more there. And I'm going to be posting the video I did with John probably later in the week, most definitely before next week. All right. So the second book is a work of fiction, and that's called Shantaram. It's by a fellow named Gregory David Roberts. And it's this semi-autobiographical story of a man who escapes prison in Australia. He had become a heroin addict and a bank robber, was put in jail, escapes, and travels to Bombay. And there has a number of adventures, the nature of which I can't tell you because I haven't yet read the book, and I haven't even read a synopsis of the plot, which would spoil it potentially. But it's a book that, again, another one that has been on my radar for a while. Multiple people have told me it's an amazing book and that it would be great to read. And when I started reading it, I read the first 40 or 50 pages and I was convinced we should read it. But the idea came from a member, from David Guyon, who, he actually wanted to do this club and just messaged me on Facebook and messaged a bunch of people saying, you know, I want to read this book. I want to read the first book, Shantaram. There's a follow-up book by the same author that he wants to read. He had read Shantaram before and he spent time in India. And so he has a real personal connection with the book. And when I got that message, I lied to him and said, hey, why don't we work together on it and let's do it in Cosmos. And he was game. So we've been planning that and putting together a web page for it and are going to invite people to sign up. If all goes well, starting on Sunday, I believe. And that's to get things started because as we grow the community, then we'll have the capacity to have other book clubs and to let our members just propose their own and to start their own, you know, without proposing it necessarily, but saying, hey, I want to read this book. Who wants to read with me? And we give a step-by-step process on just how to set that up and how to invite people in. And then, you know, we have this Zoom video conferencing, we have the forum and we have a template and it's sort of like, roll your own book club. So that's.
Did you say grow your own book club?
Roll your own book club.
I like grow your own too. It's like you get the seed packet and the little pot, and you're like growing your own herbs or whatever.
Yeah, that works too. So, was that good? Was that a good pitch? I don't know. Mm-hmm.
I feel informed.
Okay. Good. I did a podcast last week with the folks who do iWake Technologies. It's an audio meditation app, and they're doing a thing called the Spiritual Technologies Summit, where they talk with various innovators and thinkers in the field of what they call spiritual technologies, like biofeedback or tracks or VR type stuff. But I have a history with them. We've done websites for them, Kayla and I. And so they invited me to be on the Spirit Tech Talk. And I read from Shantaram on the podcast to give a taste for what it was like. But I got so emotional doing it because the prose is so beautiful, and the story of like human struggle that just is laid out like at the outset of the book, and which then is carried forth through the rest of the novel, is so powerful. I almost couldn't finish reading it, and so I don't want to do that this time. But that will come out, I think, at the end of April, and nice. People will be able to hear it.
Nice. So we had a question from the community, from Derwin, about production plans. And is that with reference to podcasting specifically? Or because we are doing more podcasts, and we are kind of trying to figure out what our podcast network is going to look like. So I wonder if we could address that.
I don't know whether Derwin specifically was talking about podcasting, but that is definitely the first thing that we're doing production-wise, and that we are actively working on. I would like to also have to be able to do video and to do full-scale productions, but we will need the resources to do that. However, with people and the resources we have now, we can do podcasting, and the question is how exactly we roll it out. So I've been talking with Charles Gammel, and we are working on what is amounting to a kind of two-phase plan for that, because where I think I would ultimately like to go is to create the capacity for anybody, any member of Cosmos, to create a podcast. And even more than that, or even less than that in a certain way, like not exactly create a podcast, unless you want to. But the thought, the idea that I'm proposing and that I've started discussing with Charles, but we haven't totally fleshed out, and even you and I haven't even really talked about this, is that there's a certain, here's what I've noticed, that there are people who want to start a podcast, they want to have certain kinds of conversations, but there's an overhead that goes into starting a podcast, which you may not really want to face. Like you have to have a name for your show. You have to brand it. You have to set up a website for it, or you have to connect it to iTunes. Like you have to do a whole bunch of work. And then once you start the podcast, then you have to in some way commit to it. Like do so many episodes per month, or an episode a week, or whatever it is. And then if you don't keep it going, you feel guilty about it. And I know this because I've been doing it. I think that there's something that could be really useful about making it possible for people to just have conversations without needing it to be a full-fledged podcast. And there's no reason why, given the technology we already have, we can't just let people use it to have the conversations that they want to have, and then record those and release them as audio recordings, as podcast episodes, but in a sort of broader sense. So what if we took Infinite Conversations? Because right now we have a website, infiniteconversations.fm, And the podcast I've had, which is like 9 episodes, is called Infinite Conversations. What if we take that and then turn that into the community podcast, which is basically anybody who wants to have a conversation with anybody else about anything and record it and put it out can do that. And there's a simple procedure where you log in, you schedule it on the calendar, and you get the link to call in, and then it gets recorded, and then the recording gets posted, and then you add your description to it, and then it gets shared to the website. And that, it just gets posted just in the same way that, in a way, it would be an analog to the forum, where you can start a topic on the forum and then have a text-based discussion. Mm-hmm. You could start a topic on the podcast network and have an audio-based or speech-based discussion. So you could schedule it and say, Carolyn, I want to talk with you. Let's schedule it. You know, here's some possible times. We do it. Or you just schedule it. Say, I'm going to do this talk at this time. Who wants to join me? Have people sign up. Do it. And then it gets posted. And that just adds to the overall infinite conversation. And then my particular podcast, if I want to have my own like real podcast that's branded and whatnot, then I'll call that something else. And in fact, I know what I'm going to call it. That's the Mind to Mind podcast, which I guess would be the evolution of Infinite Conversations, and Infinite Conversations would fork and become like the community podcast, which I think is more appropriate, actually. Like, yeah, that makes more sense. So anyway, we want to get to that, but there isn't a proven market for that we know of yet. Like, there are a couple apps out there that do something similar, not exactly. So we discussed starting more with actual podcasts, and Charles works, you know, independently as a podcast producer. So he works with clients who may or may not be interested in the co-op side of things. And we're talking about, as one revenue stream, working with those clients. So providing some resources that he needs. Like, so Charles does the audio editing part. He doesn't do web design. Whereas Kayla and I do web design. And so basically providing like a piece of the puzzle that he could serve to his clients.
Right.
And then some of those may be also interested in Cosmos. Mm-hmm. And then those we would, you know, fold into more of a, you know, the sort of curated podcasting program where we actually develop shows and develop channels.
I want to call attention to what you just described being the kind of thing that one can do, and what we hope to support happening in Cosmos is the connection you just made with Charles to say, you have these skills, I and my wife have these skills. If we combine forces, we can provide a value-added product to your clients. That's exactly the kind of connection we hope people are making in Cosmos. And it's right now very informal, as it is with you and Charles, who just became acquainted through Cosmos and through your social networks. But, you know, eventually we hope, and also, actually, I just hired a friend of mine who's a writer to a couple hours a week just out of my own pocket, because I feel like I really need it to help me move writing projects along by providing some of the tedious, you know, production skills for producing these writings that I didn't feel like I could do or wanted to do, and my focus needed to be elsewhere. So that's exactly the kind of collaborative opportunities that we hope are fostered. And we also want to explicitly support that kind of interaction when we build out our marketplace, where you can, you know, meet and collaborate and hire each other and, you know, basically enhance what you're offering through these kind of value added things. So from what I'm hearing, you and Charles have discussed a profitable partnership that's kind of outside of Cosmos, but yet it's connected, because what you'll be working on will integrate with building out the podcast network of Cosmos, and also the clients may join Cosmos and things like that. So that's really great.
Yeah. And in answer to Derwin's question, that would be like how our production capacity actually grows, because now, let's say, for example, and by the way, I should just also caveat, you know, this is something that we're just talking about, but we're working on it. I'm meeting with him later today. So This is shop talk, though. That's the purpose of this. It's like, this is what's actually going on, like, behind the scenes. So,
right.
But I have to also add that caveat, because nothing set in stone. And I don't want to put Charles in a position where, like, you know, he feels, you know, that I've committed him to something that he may not be ready for, whatever.
Gotcha.
Just for what that's worth. But let's say that Charles has a client who just doesn't want to write their episode descriptions, you know, like wants somebody to listen to the talk, summarize it in some way, write some episode notes. Well, that would be a great job for a copywriter, maybe somebody like your friend, and we can make that connection and try, you know, manage the network, the networking that happens there, and then the transaction, and everybody, it becomes a win-win, because Charles gets to serve his client, that client gets the service that they need, your friend gets work and gets paid for it, and Cosmos gets whatever it get, you know, whatever fee or percentage or commission for facilitating the transaction, which will be, you know, which will be in everybody's interest, because the members of Cosmos would benefit from the co-op, you know, doing well in that sense. So I think that our production capacity will really depend on people getting involved and people offering their skills and services and asking for each other's skills and services, as you've done with your friend. Mm-hmm. I think we could talk about that a bit, because that's really part of our roadmap. And it's part of where we see ourselves going, where we see our development energies going toward.
Yeah, and another facet of what you just laid out would be that the original creator of the podcast was receiving support for the actual production, so that, you know, he or she or they, their inner light, or their, you know, their content, what they really just want to be focused on, is able to shine with less overhead on their part. And in a sense, that's getting to what our purpose and mission is with Cosmos, is that we help, you know, everybody's light come out and be more available and accessible to each other. And also that we're engaging with that and providing an audience that isn't just a passive audience, but engages with the content. And in that process, we're shaping each other. And so so there's that aspect too, that, you know, for the creative, they are receiving support. The bottom line is that they're receiving support to realize their content or realize their ideas.
And I think you bring up a good dimension of it, that which is that the support is partly technical. But it's also cultural. So, like, if you start a podcast on the network, and you feel like could be a good home for it, and it could still have its own identity and its own, you know, style, its own brand. It doesn't have to be the purpose is not to overtake your brand or to conform to, like, Cosmos. That's why it's Cosmos. It's like big, spacious, you know,
spacious,
room for many different constellations of, you know, stellar possibilities, but it's also cultural support, because what we're really creating is a platform for culture. It's a platform for conversations, for creativity, and for attention that's mindful, that, like, is curious, you know, that has more of the better qualities, you know, of what we human beings can accomplish together, than is often, you know, represented in kind of in our social media landscape currently, where things are just a lot more chaotic and a lot noisier. So can we create a space that is more supportive of the best of what's best of us, of our inner light, like you put it, coming out? That's what I see.
Yeah. And I want to also take an opportunity to say that our growth as an ecosystem, as a Cosmos, will be slow and will be necessarily constrained by not just participation like actual tangible participation among the people, but also the systems connecting the dots, the communications, the transparency of our operations, the actual operations. So we talked just prior to starting the recording about the next step for us as kind of an executive team is to choose a project management software to that we commit to and that will accommodate any of our members to plug in and see, like truly see what is happening in full relief, including hours logged and budget and things like that, so they can really see the inner workings of this beast, you know, as opposed to just seeing the front end of the forum or the journal and things like that. So, yeah.
I think that's really important because, yeah. I mean, one of the things with cultural production is that, like, you know, in this day and age, we're just used to it being ubiquitous. We're just used to it being available. So you go on YouTube and, you know, there's more videos that you can watch in like many, many lifetimes. And there's like, you know, like, I don't know, it's like 1,000 hours like uploaded every second or something insane like that. But what you don't see is all the work that goes into producing something that's of quality.
The other thing too is that there's a reason that, you know, there's no emphasis on quality in those spaces. It's because the more hours per second that get uploaded a video on a platform like YouTube, the more profitable YouTube is in terms of advertising sales, right? So it's really the rapid growth and rapid, you know, kind of gorging growth model is really tied to an exploitative capitalism that needs to be, you know, using our eyeballs and exploiting our eyeballs for profit. And so I just want people to understand, like, what I as a co-op developer, I acknowledge the possibility that people join. And even for $2 a month, they may join and think, so what's happening? So who's doing the work? Who's doing this? Like, why isn't there more features now? And it's really like, as a cooperative, it's this kind of a thing. It's like, we have to lift each other up together. And so it's not a passive thing. You're not a consumer like you are on Facebook or YouTube, really. And you're a participant. And to the extent that we actually succeed in building out fluid, usable systems so that people can participate meaningfully. Those are the constraints to our growth, but those will be what we build out as we grow. Increasingly, we hope.
Yeah. And you and I are not going to build them all. Like,
that's, no.
Like, we need other people to,
yeah.
Like, to start doing.
We need genius developers, genius designers. Mm-hmm.
But you started getting into some material that I think you're working on. Because I read skimmed, I should say, a first draft of a piece that you've started recently and have been sharing with the initial group of readers, which we're hopefully going to be able to publish in the coming weeks or months or however long it takes.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if you want to get into that. I've been talking about a lot of things I've been working on, but you've been doing things too.
Sure, I can.
Not necessarily
I can
administratively,
talk about it briefly,
but
yeah.
Material.
Yeah.
Material. And we've also been collaborating on a project too. So maybe we can talk about that as well.
Sure. Yeah. So just for clarity's sake, I have not been doing much in the way of work, you know, toward Cosmos, like building out certain things in the past week, especially because I've been focused on this podcast that you and I, Marco, have done, which is a conversation in response to what ended up being the final Buddhist Geeks podcast, which we didn't know at the time, but called Secular Buddhism with Stephen Batchelor. And so it's kind of, the conversation is a bit of a response to that. And I share about kind of an interesting take on Buddhism so I've been Buddhist since having a spiritual experience in 2010 that was an embodied thing that I couldn't deny. And so I was thence on the quote unquote path. But I also had prior to that an interesting exposure to ideas and models of how consciousness gains complexity and how the sense of a self develops in a complex consciousness. And through the author Douglas Hofstadter and his book Gödel, Escher, Bach, and things like that. So I have these kind of just different lenses on what consciousness means, and I have found interesting ways, I think, to reconcile them, because I can't just necessarily accept certain Buddhist teachings, interestingly, like just at face value, because of these other sides of consciousness, and also of what sustainability means and what sustainability on a planetary scale looks like through my research prior to discovering Buddhism. So it's a conversation about that, and it's going to be three parts. The first two parts are that conversation, and then the third part we're hoping to get Vince from
I haven't talked to him about
Buddhist
it
Buddhist Geeks. We're hoping to, yeah.
I think it'd be cool.
It would be cool because, like, as we just actually discussed in the podcast, although I think I've edited those bits out, we can put it in the third episode, would be about the ending of Buddhist Geeks too, on part, and like, what, you know, could we continue the conversation the way that we are continuing the conversation de facto through having this podcast? You know, what are the opportunities there?
So, well, we should say Buddhist Geeks, for it's a podcast. I don't know exactly when it started, maybe 2006 or 2007, went for mm-hmm. a number of years. Vincent Horn was the host. He wasn't the only one involved, but also his wife, Emily Horn, was involved, and they held a few conferences. Mm-hmm. They had a community going, and it was a great podcast about the intersection of Buddhism and technology. Got a lot of exposure. It was featured in Wired magazine and other places. I knew Vince from our work at Integral Institute in Boulder before he started that podcast. So I've followed it all these years, and I've been a fan of it. And as it turned out, not knowing it, you were also a fan of the podcast,
mm-hmm.
And had had some thoughts specifically in response to that episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to find the episode to listen to it so that I could have a conversation with you about it. That's when I discovered that he had stopped recording, that they'd stopped the podcast. And so it was also, it was also a response to that. Now, they may start it up again. Who knows?
Yeah, that would be great.
It was just a way, in a certain way, like to carry on that conversation, like, you know, in our own direction, and to create that connection there, which was nice because, it was a good conversation too. Like, re-listening to it ahead of like some of the editing work that we've been doing, I realized that we were definitely on to some things, and I think it'll be an interesting listen for people.
Is it called You Are Somebody or You Are Anybody? Any body. That's kind of the theme of it. It's about bodies.
Yes.
Embodied consciousness. Anything else you wanted to add about that podcast? When is it coming out, do you think?
So we got a description for it. We have a title or a couple of proposed titles. I'm going to respond to you about that on the forum.
Okay.
I think it should be You Are Anybody for somebody. Because that's actually what you said. And that was like the kind of one of the aha, like insight moments, I think, in the podcast.
Oh, okay.
And also...
Don't want to give it away.
We're
being silly right now, listeners.
Even the ethical argument, though, I think... is more based on the idea that you are anybody than the idea that you're somebody.
That's true.
Which has more connotations of sort of your egoic individual self, whereas anybody is like the sense that you is this, I don't know what to call this, foam self that you
have. Okay. Divergence. Yeah,
so I'm recording an intro to it, as I've done with my other podcasts. We've collaborated. You wrote the summary of it. We're discussing the title, and that's how I've worked. And again, like, that's part of like what we're trying to engender, right? Is like this collaborative, these collaborative relationships, and not just with me and you, but members with each other. And of course, like, we're going to need more of the infrastructure and more of the organization to really facilitate that and make it easy, because right now it takes a fair amount of, you know, just doing it the old fashioned way, like, email. And but part of the reason we have the forum is to provide a place where those connections can happen. And part of the reason we have different channels, including the co-working space channel and the creative studio channel is to facilitate those collaborations. And like now we're sort of modeling and starting them off, but what we will be developing are more templates that allow others to just enter into those relationships with each other. And I don't know if that ultimately answered Derwin's question. He may have had some specific questions too about things that he particularly wants to do, but I think it sort of gets, you know, in the direction of where we're going with the production idea and even the incubation idea a little bit.
Yeah.
So,
the other thing that this is not co-op shop talk though, so I feel a little self-conscious talking about it. The Trump pieces. I am writing it's like a novella length series of pieces about Trump's political ascension and consciousness and how this happened and why it is gonna, you know, basically, yeah, the nature of power and consciousness and innate power versus political power.
I'm interested in reading them. Like I said, I skimmed them only and enough to see that that I would be interested in reading them more. Enough to just feel like you're going in a fruitful direction with it.
Yeah. So as a content producer, that's what I've been up to. Not been super hands-on with Cosmos in the last couple weeks, but have been making progress towards that changing and really getting back on the horse of making things happen in Cosmos. What else should we share about?
Well, I guess a couple things. Like the idea of a roadmap and the idea of like the sort of major things that we're developing. We talked about production, right? Because if you look at, like, we broke it down. Like, what does Cosmos actually do? Like, what services does it provide to its members? And and we broke that down into production, incubation, production, the marketplace, sponsorship, and publishing, right? And each of those pieces works together synergistically. So like it's actually a cycle, right? Like you can come in with an idea and you can incubate it, and then you can develop it and then produce it like into whatever it is, book, podcast, film, article, reading group, whatever. You know, then you could promote it. And then you can get sponsors for it, or you can develop services or goods that may come out of it to build in an economic component, which is important, which is essential to being able to do quality work. And so I was really seeing that, and one of the things that it really came out of our dialogues last fall and this winter is that we really are building the infrastructure for a creative life cycle. And there are pieces of that that are functional right now, and there are other pieces that are more proposed or imagined,
right,
or envisioned, I should say.
Right.
But there is a coherence to the overall design, and that's where this sort of roadmap comes in, and that's also where the tension comes in between like what we can do given the time and resources that we have and what we actually, you know, want to do, what we envision doing, which will require more. And we're on the path though. Like we're on the road. We're walking the path. We opened up membership. We're starting to have people sign up. We've gotten, I can tell you, I should have like led off with this because it's exciting. But we have now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 with one, the check I got yesterday. And 9 with a sign up through Readers Underground co-op members. So we're almost to 10.
And 9 co-op members.
That's a week. That's week one. more or less. Like, it's, you know, that's not
and
bad.
And we have not been, like, really treating this like a, you know, heavy launch and trying to get as many people as we can. Because one of the key things that we've talked about is quality and kind of curation and making sure people who enter the space are supported. So we're not looking for big numbers, but it is exciting to have increases. And one of the key things I hope to address, you know, when I am able to work toward these goals, have the time for it, is our transparency concerns. Because for instance, a lot of like what you just shared about the whole kind of vision and for the company and what it can accomplish and how we've done a lot of that thinking, but it's not been effectively shared. And we know how we would want to share it. We would want to share it through this, through the Codex channel within Cosmos Co-op channel. And that would be, it'll be like a canonical document, and each kind of theme or topic has its own page, its own canon, and like people can engage with it and can critique and can, you know, that's really what we part of the way in which we would actually actually support engagement among members of this collective project called Cosmos. So I, you know, to have members join, I have this tension of picturing them like not being sure what's going on or who that, you know, who to talk to or how to get started. And so we're hoping the community guides role will help with that, but also just actually having, you know, things to sink your teeth into, right, that are about this collective creature.
One way to think about that, I mean, is that it's a kind of coding, like we're coding the organization that we want to want to have for ourselves.
Absolutely. And in terms of values, ethics, rules, right?
But what the next step in terms of both development and in terms of the transparency that you're talking about is to put the code out so that the community can examine it, can add to it, can critique it, can update it. Like it's we're envisioning this unfolding similar to how, analogously to how an open source software project would unfold, where anybody can look at the code, anybody can examine it, anybody can improve upon it. And there are, of course, measures in place so that nobody can go in and wreck the code. Like it needs to, you know, there's a sort of an, I don't know what to call it, but a trust process, you know, people doing things, starting on little things, making small contributions, and then kind of building up, you know, so that it actually gets developed in a coherent and integrative manner.
Right.
But it's still a fundamentally open process that, you know, is there for anybody to see and to engage with. And that's one of the items that will unfold with time, because it takes time to even just to take one document and put it up. You don't just want to slap anything up there. I mean, you know, we want it to be relatively coherent and in a good presentable format that somebody can engage with. And it's not like, you know, just random notes that are not really put together well. And we have a mix, you know, some stuff is more notes that we've taken. Some stuff is much more coherent. But
all of it is a source for generative conversations, I feel like. So what's interesting about this kind of a development process, and I love the analogy of coding, of like open source development of software, whereas we're kind of open source, at least among our members, so not entirely open, but open source developing of a culture and a community and an organization, a cooperative organization from within. And I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. That's the problem with live recordings. It's like, wait, what was I going to say? Yes, I remember. You know, Marco and I have spent a fair amount of time getting really clear on the identity, the essence of what Cosmos is and what it's not, you know, but the kind of values and ethics and kind of at that level of reality, that intangible level of what we value, right? How that actually gets translated into tangible forms, the material, pathways of, you know, of the organization. That is exactly what is up for debate. You know, if we can hold true to an identity that we all resonate with on that intangible level, but the actual implementation should be problematized and everybody, you know, should feel like they have a chance to critique it and change it if the way we think we're interpreting those values is not really working for people. So, you know, just Marco and I trying to design the, you know, the actual implementation of said values is not going to work because we're just two people with our two sets of biases and, you know, with how we look at the world. But if we can really have a robust, diverse, you know, engagement on, well, how do we interpret, you know, creating supportive spaces and, you know, practicing sponsorship, practicing supporting each other, practicing mentoring. How do we actually interpret that? What are the systems and protocols and actual behaviors that that entails? So that's the kind of stuff we, you know, all of that can, there's like truly infinite conversations we could have about it. But I kind of look at this process of continue, like for me as kind of a space holder, as like continuously clarifying. Have you ever made ghee?
Oh, clarified butter?
Yeah, clarified butter, right. So the clarifying process, you're like slowly cooking it and you're slowly, you know, clarifying and kind of skimming off what, you know, what you don't want. I feel like my whole role for the next however long in Cosmos is just a clarifier, is a facilitator and a space holder, and just clarifying and be like, how does that tie to our core identity? How does that tie to our core identity? And just getting really clear on that core identity, that character that Cosmos has that other spaces might not have. So I'm eager to start that. I do feel a little overwhelmed because we have written so much in this so-called codex. So, you know, where to begin? Well, we could begin anywhere really and have some good conversation. So hoping that that will transpire very soon.
So I'd say,
as soon as possible.
Yeah, the codex is big on our roadmap, is starting to roll that out. For me, the other two major pieces, and maybe we need to have a discussion later about just how they line up or what order they're in, but the other two big pieces for me are sponsorship, which
I
is
agree.
Sort of this capacity to support another person in their projects and for members to have their projects supported, their writing supported, their work supported, in a way sort of building our own version of Patreon, but which is much more grounded in community, because on Patreon, you have your individual page and your individual forum, and you're totally isolated from everybody else, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
Whereas,
and not only that, but on Patreon, you really can only have your page set up for one media. So if you just do comic books, great. But if you're somebody who does multiple different things and, you know, different media, it's not really set up for that, and you know, you have to get real creative with how you customize your page to do that.
Yeah, so like a Cosmos super user would like have a podcast and they'd be publishing things on Metapsychosis or another publishing, you know, platform we may have, which we've talked about before. They may also be participating in the forum, they may have a channel on the forum, they may sometimes be a guest on other people's things, and so it's more interconnected, multi-dimensional, and you can build up more of a richer creative portfolio, if you will, in this envisioned ultimate sort of platform, right?
Right.
At the beginning stages of it,
right?
And then the sponsorship piece is the same thing as Patreon, where other people can support you in doing that. And I think that this is going to be really key. I mean, it's been for me and for my family, we're getting to the edges of our financial comfort zones where, because I'm putting so much time into Cosmos, I'm not putting that much time into earning money directly, you know, we need to start building in these economic mechanisms so that I can be supported and others can be supported.
But also I want to just point out that our concept of sponsorship is not limited to the economic sphere. It's actually also more multidimensional and integral in terms of supporting through mentoring, through thanking, through liking, through, you know, a lot of different ways to show support, including giving money.
Totally. Exactly. So there's that piece of it. And then there's the marketplace piece of it. And this is another more money oriented piece. And that is in a sense already live in that we have now we're selling membership. You can buy, take your credit card. You can send a check as well. We have a Bitcoin address. We have an Ethereum address. So we can accept money and we can sell things. But the idea of the marketplace more to be build it out and more to include members who have something that they want to share. And we have a sort of half halfway measure right now, which has not been used yet, but it's on the forum. And that's simply a channel there called Marketplace, which where you could post opportunities or commercial type of posts. I'm probably going to post at some point that one of my clients is looking for a voice actor for their videos. So that'd be the kind of thing I would post on the marketplace. And there isn't going to be a direct like Cosmos getting a cut of that or anything. Like it's just one of the things as a member, you can post something just like Craigslist. You can post something there. I guess that's not live. That is live yet, but we haven't really promoted it. The larger vision though would be to create the platform where members can sell things and sell goods and services and benefit from the network effect of being on a platform with others who are doing similar things and who are in conversation with you and who share, broadly speaking, a culture. So bringing that forward is going to be, again, we're going to need the numbers and we're going to need the resources and we're getting started. Haven't yet sent an email to our list inviting them to join. Haven't yet posted on social media specifically about Cosmos or about membership. And what are we waiting for? Just a couple of things, really. I think we should finish our podcast episode. So potential members could get to know you a bit more as CEO. Like it'd be great. I think it'd be important for people to hear your voice and the way you think about things because our nexus has been really, crucial to the generation, like to getting to this point, and it'll grow beyond us. But at this initial stage where we're small and where this is we're germinating, I think it's, people are going to resonate with us or not. And those that do, I think, we'll be able to help grow. So I think we should have that before we blast the list.
When there's just two people and there's just two plates, the thing is like clearing things off the plate. That's really what it comes down to is we're trying to just like get out from under our massive to-do lists. And so getting the podcast out is just one example of like clearing that plate. But we are moving in the directions of what you were speaking about.
Yeah, I actually only have a couple things like that left on my particular
Good.
List.
Yeah, I think me too.
And then we'll really like open it up and then take what comes, take what comes in and work with whoever comes. The fun part. And that's really, I think what we're building towards. So.
Okay. Last plug is the only real tangible, volunteer role that people can play besides just like reaching out to one of us and being like, hey, I'll do whatever. That would be great. But if you want to get plugged in now with volunteering, and you have been around the block, so to speak, on the forum for a while, is the community guides role, where it's basically just, being a human being that sends a message, a template message that you can customize however you like, to new incoming members and kind of befriending them in this very light touch way because, they may or may not need support to really plug in. But so you can do that by joining the group. Is that right? Community Guides. It's on, the group called Guides. It's the instructions are in the forum. If you look under, I'm actually on the forum right now. I'm trying to find it. If you look under Cosmos Co-op, you'll see Did I move it or did I fail to
No,
move
it's
it?
there.
Sorry.
It's there under the
It's there.
costume.
Okay.
Yeah, and you could, and if you do a search for community guide, it'll
Yeah,
show up.
that's true. You could do a search for community guide. If you look under the Cosmos Co-op channel, you'll see a piece called On Caretaking Our Members, Spaces, and Experiences on Cosmos, the community guide role. And I encourage you all to read that and sign up as a volunteer guide. The ask is very minimal. Like I said, we have 9 members so far. That means a total of 9 people ever yet that we have had to do this for. But again, it's just kind of a way to model our culture, a culture that, reaches out and connects to the human being and wants to support and endorse them to realize their potential. So, yeah, if you have any questions, you can message me as well about that. But we'll be catching up with our guides inbox here. Marco and I will be shortly.
Yeah, and actually, I was thinking we should probably put that eventually, like in the codex, even on the website, so it has more like stable home. Right now, it's a post in the forum, and it's like some things I think we should pluck out of there and put in more of a
Sure.
structured space. But we can come back to that. Is there anything else? I think we've been going for about an hour, and I think we covered our list. Shall we call it a meeting?
Yeah, well, I always like to end with what's the next steps, and I think I already have said mine, but just to reiterate, moving forward on a transparent project management choice so that we can really have our roadmap not just laid out but actionable. That's kind of what seems like should happen in the next week to the extent that I have bandwidth. And then I personally need to get in a groove, just figure out what is the right kind of daily actions for kind of just plugging in, being involved, being part of the fabric of Cosmos so that whatever needs to be done will feel emergent. Doing so, community guides, actually sending community guides messages is something I can check that inbox every day, for example. And then, yeah, my next big passion project is the Codex and starting up committees, really just getting people participating in these critical questions facing the organization at a developmental level.
Cool. Yeah, for myself, working on the Bubbles reading, the Shantaram reading with David Guyon, and then the podcast with you. I have projects kind of going with a few other people as well. I won't go into all that. But then the real next big thing for me is going to be sending an email to our whole list, our entire Cosmos list, about signing up for membership and reaching out personally to people too who I want to work with and specifically want to work with, who I know and I feel like would have some real could have a real role in this organization or just as a content as a producer, as a creator. I want to reach out to people personally and invite them in. It's tough, because everybody's busy with so many other things. And it can be hard, I think, to conceive of like entering into like a collaborative relationship, like a bigger thing.
Yeah.
It's the reflex, which I sometimes feel as well, is like, well, if I can just do it myself, I can get it done, I don't have to deal with anybody else. And I think that like the argument I want to make really is that you can go, and it's this bumper sticker saying I've seen that if you want to go fast, go alone, and if you want to go far, go together. And I think I want to go far. I want to go fast too, and that's part of the frustrating part of it, but I want to go far. And I think we need to work together for that.
This is something that I've faced in every startup co-op I've ever worked with, which is in the very early stages, only visionary people are going to be on board because it's entirely hypothetical. It's entirely, really, it's entirely a logic model. It's an art, it's a description of something that doesn't exist in reality. And so those who have faith in that description, in that logic model, are going to be on board early. But really, like, there's this there's this big gap oftentimes in starting up a food co-op, for instance, between the people who will sign up just on your word, just on the description of what is possible, and the people who will sign up once there's a store, right? It's once there's something that they can look at and say, that's real, it's happening, these people really have their shit together, it's for real, I can get on board with that. And so for us, like, our development will be constrained by how many visionaries are contributing in these early design stages, because some people will need something tangible to engage with. Maybe it's sponsorship, maybe it's marketplace, but some kind of a feature, right, beyond what's there now, that they'll say, okay, if this exists, then I can trust this, then I will join this. And so, to the extent that we can take a permaculture approach where we are looking for the smallest intervention that will have the greatest yield, and just doing that iteratively ad infinitum, that's what we, maybe how we will be able to proceed, because it's impossible to get where we need to go without people buying in, but there's also this limitation of people being able to see the possibility. Like, what Marco and I have envisioned collectively, we might describe to someone and they might be like, that's not going to happen. Like, it's not real. It's totally imaginary. It's totally visionary. It's not going to happen. And so, you know, the little successes, the little tangible leverage points, it's almost like when you're rock climbing, you're looking for those little grips. It's like any little thing we can do that, that moves it forward will build that faith, will build that trust, and build the belief in the ultimate vision. So,
yeah, that's a really great point. And in fact, I mean, we do have things people can do, like the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do.
Is that's a start.
The journal. The forum, yeah, they're all happening.
They're happening. They're real. It's really happening. And if that's what you want to do, that's great. Not everybody has to like be a co-op developer and work on the codex or do this geeky stuff. I mean, we definitely need those people, and we need the visionaries who have faith in the sort of the larger vision. But if you just want to read Shantaram, you just want to read an awesome novel, you don't have to even worry about the co-op.
Right.
If you want to have a good conversation, just sign up for the book groups, and that we're going to do those. Those are happening starting really, really soon. So sign up. And then later, if you want to do co-op stuff, cool. If not, that's cool too. We do need the co-op people, but we also need just readers who want to have good conversations.
Well, and more than the co-op stuff, we need people who want to integrally cooperate with each other, like who want to be involved in discussions that are going to lead to something, dialogues that are going to build towards doing something that you want to see happen on this platform. You know, that's, we need people who are game for that, essentially.
I know they're out there.
I know. Well,
you were out there.
The consistent.
You were out there before I met you.
The one consistent thing across any of our spaces, from Shantaram Book Club to geeky co-op systems conversations, is that we are, through our participation, we have a generative space. So whatever your particular preferred mode of play at the time of joining, great. At the same time, you might discover other ways to play as you become a better player. You might find that you enjoy